The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This week's episode of Talking Simpsons is brought to you by you. That's right, we're on Patreon now, so head on over to patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. For as little as $5 a month, you can help our show and get all kinds of great extra content on top of that. We've got a ton of great bonus content waiting for you right now, so head on over to patreon.com/talkingsimpsons today.
I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, ahoy, everybody. Welcome to Talking Simpsons, recorded live on an unusually warm February 14th. I'm your host, Bob Mackey, who's not interested in brunch at all. And this is the Laser Time Podcast Network's chronological exploration of The Simpsons. Who else is here with me today?
Henry Gilbert.
And who else?
Didn't feel like writing anything, Chris Antista.
There's a reason. And
yes. Yeah.
Because today's episode is what I feel is the worst Simpsons show ever, another Simpsons clip show.
All you have to do is think about your most cherished memories.
And they sure did. And today's episode aired on September 25th, 1994. And as always, Chris will tell us what happened on this mythical day in real-world history.
Oh, my God!
Oh, Bobby, I'll make love to you because Time Cop debuts in theaters. Boys to Men rule the music charts with 2. And the music biz is a-changin' with R.E.M.'s Monster debuting alongside Rolling Stones' Visa credit cards. And the quick and uncomplicated trial of O.J. Simpson is ready to start.
Oh, awesome.
Dumb, man.
Turn on Core TV for that one.
That Monster album was everywhere. It was so heavily promoted.
The Boys to Men one?
Well, I believe... I mean R.E.M.'s Monster.
Oh, okay.
If I'm not mistaken, I think R.E.M. made the most... has the most lucrative record contract in history because they had moved over to Warner Brothers at that point and then re-upped. And then after that, the music industry shit the bed entirely. and the R.E.M. after this was not the R.E.M. before, as popular as the R.E.M. before this.
I want to talk about Boys to Men real quick, though.
Oh, man, yeah.
Because I was in middle school at this point. I recall going to a lot of Catholic middle school dances. And they would play "I'll Make Love to You," and even as a 12-year-old, I was like, "Is this appropriate?"
Yes, they were such catchy slow jams that they were able to cross over from R&B charts into pop. And by crossover, I mean white people listen to it.
Yeah,
but it was on all the radio. I heard it all the time. I bought the album.
It was
I loved
obnoxious.
It. And like Boys to Men, ABC.
I love that shit. I love that shit.
Yeah, ABD. Another
Motown
band.
Field. I love that stuff. The slow jams and. It was just so everywhere for so long. Mm-hmm. I grew to hate it so much. I'm not ready to like it again.
"I'll Make Love to You" is the perfect like R&B. It is of the R&B genre of like I will give you oral sex.
I never knew what their name meant.
Yeah. They are boys becoming men?
No, that there are 2 kids and 2 grown men in the fucking band.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
By the time I knew about them, I think the kids had grown up.
Yeah, I was younger than them, and I couldn't tell.
I remember on the I Love the 90s shows, when they got to the Boys to Men, this album, the actress who played Lisa on Family Matters had this great observation of like how that song was everywhere, and she would hear it at weddings, "I'll Make Love to You," and she's like, "We're in church. Come on." Like,
yeah, kids don't need to hear it. But I want to say that, okay, so this is my estimation that this is the worst Simpsons episode ever. And I'm sorry we have to punish you with this, but we have to be complete and thorough with every episode, and this is an episode.
And I believe we noticed our lowest performing episode last time was, a Simpsons clip show?
To date, our least downloaded non-interview episode was It's Come to This, a Simpsons Clip Show, which I think is because...
It's for 2 reasons, because the nerds know what it means, or you don't know what it means, and it seems like, well, I'm not going to listen to that.
If you're a new listener, why would you download that one? Yeah. Because it seems that we're giving you a clip show.
We're
which
not.
Which in that one and in this one, we are not giving you
it's
a clip show.
It's very unfair.
As Homer would say, I'm putting my whole ass into this.
It's worth listening to. I agree.
Yes.
So I had some Twitter adventures because I was watching this where I usually do research, and I was like, wow, this is the worst episode ever, and I tweeted that out. It's so bad, people don't remember which clip show it is. They're like, oh, I hate that one. That's the one where they're all singing. He's like, no, that's All Singing, All Dancing. Oh, I hate that one. That's where the Homer's in a coma. No, that's So It's Come to This. They thought it was Gump Roast. No one remembers this episode. And our friend Bill Oakley actually tweeted at me, and he's like, oh, was that the one written by the great Pennywise?
Yes.
And I said, yes, it's his worst episode by far. And Bill Oakley thought I was making fun of John Vitti. He was like, yeah. Well, to be fair, he wrote it under duress, and, you know, we didn't want to do it. I was like, no, I was making a joke. Yeah, I was like, pretending Pennywise was real. I love John Vitti.
Yeah,
you should talk to us.
I did reach out to John Vitti. He said that at the time, maybe I could convince him again, but he said at the time, he felt the commentaries said all he needed to say on it. He didn't want to say more stuff, which I get that.
And
but
he does swim in an Olympic-sized swimming pool full of money, thanks to the Chipmunk movies.
The Chipmunk movies, Ice Age movies, he wrote the Angry Birds movies. He's doing quite well.
Yes, and he left the show, but he was forced by contract to write these, which is why he is credited as Pennywise. Mm-hmm. But David Silverman still, in big scare quotes, directed this episode.
Yes, by name. In the next episode, the 138th episode spectacular, the next clip show, he is Pound Foolish.
Yes.
So, as in, the saying is Pennywise but Pound Foolish, in that you're saving money in a way that will cost you money later, which making a cheap-ass clip show just because it's another episode you can syndicate damages your property in the long run and hurts it, which
you're
honestly...
You're syndicated. Why would they keep doing this?
Because another episode is another episode licensing fee. So literally on a spreadsheet, they're like, if we make another one of these but cheaper as a clip show, we will make $2 million or whatever on it. So the math is there for straight profit if you do a clip show. And these clip shows happened when the 90s was the death of the clip show. Like, people, the 80s were full of them, and they were just the cheapest bullshit ever. And I knew that ugly feeling as a kid watching TV all the time, to realize from the first minute in, oh, this is a clip show.
Oh, no, they're trapped in a thing, or someone has a scrapbook.
Seinfeld has a good one.
Yeah.
But it is an assemblage of, like, it's Robot Chicken gag style. It's just, it's machine gun fire best of moments. But this one, I think, is so weird because of the structure they try and pull out of it in the third episode, which I feel like is pretty insulting, because this is like, there are still shows debuting that you need to go up against.
Right.
And why would you do this so
at the
early?
Start of the season? So, this is their most like cynical one too.
It really
reads exactly like Family Guy.
I do want to tell my theory before we start getting into the episode. My theory is this season 6 was always going to have this clip show in it. And my theory is it was going to be closer to Valentine's Day. It's a love-themed clip show.
Yeah.
But the Northridge earthquake destroyed the beginning of season 6. So episode 1 is a holdover from season 5. Episode 2 is another holdover from season 5. Next week, nothing. Mm. Next week, it's this clip show.
The first thing we could get out the door.
Yeah. September needed episodes.
Yeah.
So.
And there's some really bad new animation in this.
Yeah, I mean, they make the joke 33% new footage in the H.A. and Scratchy movie episode. This has maybe like 15% new footage.
At best. Yeah, well, as they tell it on the commentaries, this was forced on them by Fox. That Fox even proposed 4 clip shows a season to them.
Yeah.
A season to them. And so when they did the April Fool's clip show, that was a John Vitti. They all are technically John Vitti and David Silverman, because that's the deal that they're forcing on them. But when they did the April Fool's one, they had shame about it, and they gave you a full act of original animation before they got cheap. On this one, this really didn't give a shit on this one and just dumped this one out.
It's clear.
And I think they felt such intense shame that when the next time they had to do it, Oakley and Weinstein went above and beyond to the extreme with 138th episode spectacular.
That's one of my favorite episodes. So I'm not anti-clip show.
No, that one was great because they cared about it. But this one, so with the last clip show, what I did was I went and I wrote down how many clips there were total, or clip packages. There were 17. For this one, I couldn't, because almost everything is a clip. Even the framing device. So there are 2 framing devices, them on the couch and them around the kitchen table. 90% of that footage is from other seasons.
They are clips. It's not just memories.
Right, and David Merkin intentionally tried to make it as jarring as possible. So we'll jump from season to season within shots. Sometimes they're eating food, sometimes they're not.
Because that was his fuck you to them.
Yeah, he just like, you want a clip show? I'll show you how bad this can be.
Mm-hmm. And their hatred of this episode is evident in the commentary, which they do, like us, they do every episode a commentary. But this one, they completely reject even commenting on it, and they just explain for 22 minutes the process of creating an episode of The Simpsons from beginning to end.
And it's very informative.
But you will learn nothing about the making of this episode, because Merkin, Groening, Silverman would all pretend it didn't happen either.
Right. And I don't want to... I don't mean to insult Family Guy by saying this is very Family Guy, but Family Guy is making deliberate jokes to serve cutaways that are outlandish and don't fit into plots.
Right.
This feels terrible because they're making absurd excuses to make cutaways that just go back to regular clips of the show.
Yeah. A Twitter person told me this is sort of like a Simpsons Digest, where it's like, we'll give you a bite-sized version of these stories, except for Bart's story, where you see one scene.
You get one scene.
So stupid.
And I also was extra angry watching this, because I forgot they flash back to an episode that was three episodes ago. At the very least, what clip shows offered in a pre-digital era was your ability to watch old reruns that you couldn't otherwise.
Yeah.
When they show you Lady Bouvier's lover, you just saw that.
Yeah, it's true. And like with the last episode, the Simpsons sort of have to be omniscient to know every detail of the story they're telling. But in this episode, it's even more exacerbated, that issue, where it's like, Homer shouldn't know this scene happened, or Marge shouldn't know this scene happened. She was not there for it.
I wish there was a joke cutaway to like Marge explaining Jacques, like, Marge, you remember an astounding amount of details. You told me every single one.
The closest thing to good jokes in this episode is when they comment on things, when they're making kind of MST3K comments on the episodes of saying like, well, that plot doesn't make sense, or I don't know why I did that, or
commenting on the lack of jackets on Valentine's Day.
So you get some good stuff there, but you get about 1 minute of new animation at the start of the episode, and here is Marge setting it up.
This romance is so full of heartfelt passion. I can really identify with this corn-fed heroine. Homer, are you awake? This is important. Give me some sign you're awake. Wake up!
Huh? What's wrong? How's the matter, Lee? Dog's on fire?
Homie, do you think that the romance has gone out of our lives? Wake up!
Marge, it's 3 a.m. and I worked all day.
It's 9:30 p.m. and you spent your whole Saturday drinking beer in Maggie's kiddie pool.
And then we have our first clip.
Boom, which is a new kid on the block from season 4.
Yeah, Homer fishing a hot dog out from his crotch area in a swimming pool.
That I remember watching it as a kid and being like, oh no. Just seeing that clip, I was like, oh no. Because we didn't know the titles of the episodes.
Yeah, and I didn't. There was no way, like, unlike television now, there was no way to see the title of this episode.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
you don't know it's a clip show, and I don't really know what I'm watching in the beginning.
Unless you had a very accurate TV guide that would actually list the titles. I mean, most of us didn't or weren't looking at that.
Yes, and Marge was reading the 50 Shades of Grey of the early 90s.
Oh, come on. It was not Twilight fan fiction made into a legitimate book.
I mean, it was a popular romance novel with women that was everybody was reading and sold millions of copies. That's it. Yes, it's hard to compare it to Twilight fan fiction turned into...
Turned legit, quote-unquote.
Legit in quotes, yes, but...
And you eventually got us to see Meryl Streep naked.
Yeah, Clint Eastwood starred in and directed the film of it.
Did we say the name of it?
It is The Bridges of Madison County. And if you'd like to know the plot, actually this stand-up on Dr. Katz is what I always think of Bridges of Madison County, and this bit explains the plot.
You know, they say men aren't supposed to cry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I saw Bridges of Madison County, and, you know, they fell in love, and everything was good. And then they realized they shouldn't be together, and they break up, and then the real husband comes back. And he's waiting behind Clint Eastwood in the truck, and it's raining because everything bad happens in the rain. And the light turns green, but Clint doesn't move. And the guy's like, boo-boo, today, you know. And the husband says, what's he waiting for? He's waiting for her.
Hey, you want a tissue?
Can I have a minute, please?
That's great.
Yes. And that is the plot. It is.
And the TV show Duckman would do a beat-for-beat parody of this movie in, I think, the second or third season.
Holy shit, that is right, yes. In the film, Meryl Streep's family, she is a mother with children, and her husband isn't even bad. It's just she has a fun fling while they're out of town with a National Geographic photographer. And
it was unfortunately Clint Eastwood making it a lot. I can't imagine ladies rubbing one out to...
Hey, he was very handsome.
Was he? Remember
that? Remember that ad? Oh, at 95, maybe not, but yeah. Maybe women in their mid-40s still saw him as attractive.
Even after almost making out with an orangutan?
He should.
Must be a beautiful woman.
I wonder if that was just him kind of pulling the, like, I'm the director and the star.
Oh, he directed it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. In the mid-90s, it was pretty rare for Clint Eastwood to appear in anything he didn't direct. So yeah, Bridges of Madison County has inspired Marge to be interested in love while Homer does not give a crap about the book.
Homer, young people learn about love from adults, and we've been setting a terrible example for our children and the community in general. I want us to deal with the issues raised by this book.
Hmm.
I know we shouldn't have put a fireplace in the bedroom.
Which would never exist again. Every joke in this episode is not canonical, by the way, too.
Yeah.
Is the fireplace... With the book going, does that reuse animation?
That
as well?
Is from Dog of Death.
It's wow. Not though. The cover is the Bridges of Madison County.
Okay,
maybe they pulled the scene and like just put a new cover in. But
I think they did because yeah. It is the exact same shot as when he throws the lottery into into the fireplace.
Or maybe the adding of the cover was a digital effect that they could just slip
yeah,
in there.
Could be
like an early digital effect.
Well, because he also but it was absolutely the same animation.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was reused, and they.
I'd also like to point out having a fireplace in their bedroom makes the Simpsons home. Worth a lot more.
yeah, that is. That
and it makes sense because the chimney is on the bedroom side. I know.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
That is true.
I need that Lego model to find out.
So then we cut to some very jarring season one animation.
Oh, boy.
The footage of the kids watching Itchy and Scratchy is from Krusty Gets Busted.
Right.
But the film they're watching, Flaming to the Moon, is from Homer the Heretic.
And the characters' designs just change on a dime. Like, sometimes they'll have the little lines behind their mouths, sometimes they won't.
It drives you crazy.
Yeah.
And then Lisa explains what a clip show is.
How many times can you laugh at that cat getting hit by the moon?
It's a new episode.
Not exactly. They pieced it together from old shows, and it seems new to the trusting eyes of impressionable youth.
Really?
Ren and Stimpy do it all the time.
Yes, they do. And when was the last time you heard anyone talk about Ren and Stimpy?
Damn.
Marge, come on now. Ren and Stimpy was doing just fine. It was only in the first season, actually, that they would reuse the little Bullwinkle-esque shorts.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was their compromise with John Christofalusi, the creator. Like, it takes you so long to make cartoons. We will let you shuffle around these shorts and reuse them, like Log and things like that. Powdered Toast Man.
Ask Dr. Stupid.
Yeah.
Well, I remember, because I don't think, were they not going to release... Big House Blues? What's the intro?
There were because
Ren and Stimpy didn't do a clip show, but they did, like,
the opening
was the pilot, and I remember, like, months later, after there was no new episode, they used half of one regular episode and put in the pilot.
It was like Fire Dogs with Big House Blues.
So it has, like, you know, Ren and Stimpy sadly has, like, season one episode A and B, because there's, like, the same shit in some episodes, but no clips.
Well, because really, Spumco only produced, I think, six episodes of actual episodes.
You could criticize Ren and Stimpy for never reusing animation.
By this time, John Kay had been fired for 2 years. Games animation had taken over. Mm-hmm. Ren and Stimpy would end in 96, but these are the years I really like. I mean, the original ones are great, but I still was hanging on to Ren and Stimpy. Marge needs to take those words back right now. Bob Camp is my hero.
The games animation years were doing good. Like, in January that year was what I think of as my favorite games animation episode, which is Stimpy's cartoon show.
Okay, yeah. I actually have a drawing of that by the great Bob Camp.
Yeah, the inserting of Cobb. Walter Cobb's one of my favorite post Spumco recurring characters.
Yeah.
Like, the Lummix is funny, and the cheap Irishman played by Scrooge McDuck is funny.
Oh, Scotsman. Haggis McHaggis. Yes. I mean,
Haggis.
We're going on a Ren and Stimpy tangent, but it's fine. There's nothing else to talk about.
We gotta fill time some here.
But I love Wilbur Cobb, the old man in Ren and Stimpy, because it was like the grandpa jokes on The Simpsons exaggerate. Like, parts of his body could fall off.
Oh, every scene, something fell off his body. When he cleans his glasses and rips his nose off.
Yeah. His ear slides down his face.
Yes, and then they just are like, he's been in jail the entire time. I'm like, you'll be where I am.
Half the scene takes place with them inside of his pants. So please look up Stimpy's Cartoon Show. Maybe we'll do a Ren and Stimpy for talking cartoons whenever that show will be called, if we unlock it.
Yeah, pledge right there on patreon.com/talkingsimpsons.
We're getting there.
Then Bart cuts away to the Fluffy Bunny scene, which I would think that would be burned in Bart's memory, and that is the Fluffy Bunny from Bart's Friend Falls in Love, which... is the only real stuff you get of that love story.
Yes, and as always, I love throbbing biological urges. Yes.
And then somehow Marge remembers Smithers' fantasy about Burns from Marge Gets a Job.
Exactly. It's incredible. The Simpsons are omniscient now. They are gods in their own world who can see into other characters' brains and see scenes they weren't present for. It's amazing.
And they'll be a clip that is reused in 138 as well. So it's it's a double clipped clip.
They love that clip.
It's an amazing clip, but it doesn't work as a thing Marge can remember. And I at least like, as far as quality goes in the episode, they at least front load it with a couple of montages. Mm-hmm. So first we get the Mo montage.
Out of nowhere.
Most heaven.
Hello, is Al there?
Al?
Yeah, Al. Last name, Kaholic.
Let me check. Phone call for Al. Alcoholic. Jacques Strap.
Is IP Freely here?
Hey, is there a Butts here? Seymour Butts? Homosexual? My crotch? Amanda Hug and Kiss? Huge ass? Ivana Tinkle? I'm a stupid moron with an ugly face and a big butt, and my butt smells, and I like to kiss my own butt.
That will be printed on my tombstone.
That also breaks a rule of mine that I hate in clip shows where they pretend a memory from a Halloween episode works when it's like, no, Trias of Horror is not canonical. I can't remember it. At best, you can say this was a dream Bart had and he remembers that dream.
Yeah.
But it is a great closer, but I just hate that it's there.
I mean, the reason Mo said that is because Bart had magic mind powers and Mo had to say it.
Yes. And
I love that clip, though. I feel like it was worth it. Yeah. Except that Mo undergoes several dozen dye jobs.
Yeah, and his voice changes a lot.
Yeah, and just, we were watching the Simpsons movie for the commentary. I think it's on your Patreon now. Mm-hmm. I never read Mo as an old person, but he now, his model is like, just, you are gray-haired.
Gray-haired, yeah.
And that was such a gradual change, and this clip further emphasized that. Yeah. It bounced back and forth.
Mo's going great. How did they introduce the Bart calling Mo as part of a clip package?
I was just saying, don't you remember happy things you've loved? And then Bart remembers that.
Man, what a bad setup.
I think they do both of these because from one of the best parts of the April Fool's clips was the dough montage. They could at least put together a montage of similar things. It's what Duckman did really well on its clip show, which was a way better clip show in that was literal torture to Duckman. They're like,
that's right.
If we're doing a clip show, it is torture. And so
it's a real Clockwork Orange situation.
Then there's another montage of mmms.
No, ask your heart what its fondest desire is.
Chocolate. Invisible cola. Forbidden donut. Sacrilicious. Snow. Free goo. Something.
Now, as far as I can tell, that was original animation. Something had never been before. If you go to the Simpsons Wikia, which God help you if you go to Wikia, but that was the best list of sourcing every, and I mean every clip in this episode.
Right.
Something they say is completely original.
They're trying to fool you, I guess?
I guess so. Or it was a deleted scene, perhaps, that wasn't in the deleted scene set for last season.
Maybe they're showing just how easy that joke is. He could say anything and it's funny.
That felt like the writer saying, like, these jokes suck. And then he could have him just say something. But it's a great closer to the montage.
I only take issue with the sacrilicious because there's a setup to that doesn't work in clip
form. Yeah, I mean, we don't know why it's sacrilicious.
Well,
now,
if you're watching this for the first time, like, why is Homer talking about snouts? It's mostly snouts and entrails.
Oh, you're right,
It's when Homer is sad that the dog's eating better than he is because they're eating chub.
Was that the dog of death?
That is another dog of death one. They get a lot of dog of death out of this.
The Simpsons will be right back.
Hi,
Hi there, podcast listeners. Thanks so much for listening. And hey, we're sorry it's a clip show, but I think we're still having fun, right? And you know, this is brought to you by patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. Yes, we wouldn't be able to do a podcast about every episode of The Simpsons, and that includes clip shows, without your support right there. $5 a month gets you so many things on there, not just early access a week early to every episode of the show, and they're ad-free, but you also get every episode of Talking Critic, which is exclusively available there, and tons of other extras like our Season 5 wrap-up and special interviews. We did one before with Paul Provenzano, which I think was really great, and now we have a brand new one on there. What? That's right. It's an interview with Reed Harrison, an accomplished television writer who has worked on multiple episodes of The Simpsons as well as related Simpsons products. He is the man who wrote the episode The Springfield Files, aka the X-Files crossover, and he wrote the season 19 episode Papa Don't Leech, which brought back Lurline Lumpkin onto the show. Not to mention that, but he also worked on the lost season of The Critic. What's that? Well, you'll learn all about it from our conversation with Reed Harrison, and that interview is right up there on patreon.com/talkingsimpsons. And again, $5 a month supports us and helps us keep going strong. So we thank you very much for all your support.
Hey, this is Jerry Cooney, professional boxer and official greeter of Mr. Burns Casino.
Welcome to Mr. Burns Casino. If there's anything I can do to make your visit more enjoyable, please, just let me know.
Yeah, great. See ya.
You're listening to the guys on Talking Simpsons.
Hey, is that bug off?
Also wanted to let all of you know that Talking Simpsons now has its own t-shirt. That's right, we have a special new t-shirt out there, and you can find it on shirtsickle.com, or you can put in the address tiny.cc/talkingshirt. Yes, that'll take you directly to the page. It is a really cool design inspired by the Eye on Springfield logo, and it is a beautiful sky blue. I really love it. The art was done by our great friend of the show, Nina Matsumoto, who also did the awesome art for the Patreon page, and you can get this t-shirt just by going to shirtsickle.com, finding it on there, popsicle, shirtsickle, that's how it's spelled, or you can go to tiny.cc/talkingshirt, and that will take you directly to the page. I already bought mine! Lastly, this week's podcast is brought to you by audibletrial.com/talkingsimpsons, and you can get yourself a free audiobook of your choice just for signing up and starting the trial. If you're a big comedy nerd like me, I know multiple books I could direct you to, but the one I'm going to pick is Hollywood Said No, the abandoned screenplays of the Mr. Show movies. If you're a fan of Mr. Show, it's an amazing book just to get, but they go way overboard with the production of it. Basically, the guys behind Mr. Show and almost everyone who was in the cast comes back together to create audio plays of two of the film scripts that they never were able to produce. And it's all right there on Audible, and you can get it for free by signing up for a trial of Audible at audibletrial.com/talkingsimpsons. Check it out.
You like Laser Time shows? Then you might like Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly bonus show exclusively on patreon.com/lasertime. Here's a taste of what you've been missing.
I went to Las Vegas for the weekend for a bachelor party.
That's why you couldn't Vegas, watch Spider-Man. Baby. I think we had the better weekend.
We were staying at a place where, like, oh yeah, there's just always beer. So it was a fun trip. Like, the place we stayed at was fucking amazing. Like, rented an Airbnb of this dude who it was
what?
A five-bedroom, five-bathroom
holy God.
House. Wow. With outside there was a giant pool with a water slide and a fucking grotto in
water
the back.
Water slide?
Wow.
Love water slides.
But the problem is, we were probably like a mile from the strip. If we wanted to get food, like, we had to order it. And the thing I love about Vegas is you eat shittily too.
Buffets.
Like, we ordered shit from, like, Safeway.
Oh, that's awful.
And more than half of the stuff we ordered, they were like, we didn't have it, so we just Here's your order.
It's crackers and cheese.
There's no bacon in this order. There's no, like, so just have eggs. No, we were eating extremely shittily, like Homer making a meal for himself, kind of like
some moon waffles are being passed around.
No, cloves and fucking and Tom Collins
mix. Yeah.
Let's go get your mother.
I looked into it because apparently that's what cruise ship dining is too. It's just one like prolonged buffet.
That fucking failed music festival, fire music festival. That's what we were eating.
Oh shit!
But I shat in 5 different bathrooms, which is nice. I made that my mission. I'm like, look, I'm gonna find every bathroom here and shit in it.
Get bonus time, Laser Time's weekly, full-length, uncensored, and ad-free Patreon-exclusive podcast, as well as full-length movie commentaries, wrestling and cartoon video commentaries, the first season of Talking Simpson, and more at patreon.com/lasertime, starting at just $5. You'll help us live, and we'll do our best to help you never be bored again.
So the next part is basically a recap of life on the fast lane.
This is when it gets weird. Well, oh wait, I didn't want to play this clip real quick. This is Lisa describing the death of romance.
It's the one good line from this episode.
Yeah.
I guess that's line of the show.
I mean, romance, not love.
Mom, romance is dead. It was acquired in a hostile takeover by Hallmark and Disney, homogenized, then sold off piece by piece.
That's not true. Romance is all around us.
I guess.
Yeah. It's okay. I mean,
I'd almost say if something counts as a new line, I'd give it to that.
It's an all right line. It's okay.
And then when Marge is describing things too, there's moments where she's like, she says, "No, remember a moment of romance." And then Homer remembers kissing Ned from Homer Loves Flanders.
Right.
And it would seem to imply that Marge, whenever someone remembers something, Marge sees it too. So
she's the head vampire, Henry.
Yeah, that is true.
Well, one thing I want to point out is, I mean, I think the end of the episode addresses this. It's that Marge reads the book, Bridges of Madison County. He's this book is telling me what a good model for love is. Mm-hmm. Let's tell stories about our loves. And it's all horrible stories. Yeah. And two of them involve infidelity.
Yes.
And I love Marge's line, "If you mentally snip out the part where I had a husband, that's my ideal of romance." So she's saying, "What I had with Jock was great if Homer wasn't there."
Yeah, so this is when the episode gets its laziest, which is just explaining 6 classic episodes of The Simpsons to you. So sourcing the clips isn't hard because you just know the episode. Marge saying that she's explaining her planned infidelity for the first time in front of her family is fucked up.
Yes, it is.
And but seeing this reminded me, Julie and Albert Brooks together are really good and they should have more scenes.
Yeah, I mean, you talked about the MST3K comments. I love the line, "Thank goodness I drove down that ironic street."
Yeah, so this is the best line to it.
"Thank goodness I drove down that ironic street. I made the right decision to stay with my homie, and there was no harm done." So if you kind of mentally snip out the part where I already had a husband, that's my idea of romance.
"Marge, I want you to stop seeing this Jock. You can let him down gently, but over the next couple of months, I want you to break it off."
Okay, Homer.
Oof, that was a close one, kids.
Homer is kind of okay with it as long as it ends eventually.
He's just like, well, hey, it's like he understands. Look, okay, I understand you've had an affair, but I want it to end. You know, to take care of Jock's feelings, but end this. Homer also doesn't understand the end of the story that Marge didn't have sex with Jock, that she just lusted in her heart, as Jimmy Carter would say.
I would argue she went further than Homer did.
Yeah.
In terms of
deception. Well, she didn't kiss Jock. Homer kissed Mindy.
Yeah, but there were deliberate deceptions and meetups.
That's true. Marge knew what she was doing.
Homer's kind of naive.
Trip.
And he was sad about the inevitability of having to have sex with Mindy because they were both attracted
to
each other.
He told me.
It's so delicious.
And so instead of remembering the Lurline episode, which honestly remembers this one, Mindy instead of Lurline, which I think the only reason they did that is because that would have involved licensing songs again for this episode airing, and they didn't want to spend more money.
It's a clip show. Got to make them cheap.
Yep. And so, though I wonder if they had, I bet having all these guest star moments, they have to pay the guest stars. They're credited on it, so I think they're paying them. I base this just on a joke on Steven Universe where they don't do a clip show, but they have a flashback to the one time Nicki Minaj voiced a character on the show. So they play her voice, and then the character literally says, "We don't have to pay her for that, do we?" Oh, we do? Fair play.
Right. I would take that as the truth, then.
Yeah, so, but anyway, Homer is actually more empathetic than Marge here, that he recognizes they are traumatizing their children by telling these stories.
Okay, Marge, as long as we're traumatizing the kids, I have a scandalous story of my own.
And yes. We get a recap of The Last Temptation of Homer from the last season. And Homer remembers Burns sending flying monkeys after him, even though he couldn't have been there.
Somehow he remembers that. That is the... I love that joke so much. Yeah. Continue the research. And then we get... non-canonical story of what happened to Mindy.
I don't like how mean they are to Mindy. Yeah. Mindy met well, and she was a nice person.
What happened to Mindy?
Yes, what did happen to her?
She hit the bottle pretty hard and lost her job.
Good.
Aw, jeez.
Yeah.
Good.
But don't worry. This is non-canonical? It's non-canonical. Mindy would appear in multiple background scenes in the Springfield Power Plant in seasons 8 and 9.
Okay.
As well as she would be on, as a Team Homer
the
episode.
Homewreckers.
She is on the Homewreckers team with Jacques and...
Princess Cashmere.
Jacques, Princess Cashmere. And wasn't Lurleen, or was it?
She ever voiced
maybe Lurleen and Mindy.
Michelle Pfeiffer again?
No. She never talked again, but she would be mentioned, so don't worry, folks, that did not happen to Mindy. Lurleen would go, she would wake up in a ditch, but...
That would happen to Lurleen.
Which is very mean. Those are both very mean. Lurleen would return in like a season 20-something episode in a better position.
It's a common trajectory of hee-haw musicians.
But it's like any character who comes to the show and tries to disrupt Homer and Marge's marriage, they must be punished by the universe. Yes.
And Bart's What Happened to Mindy scene... That is from the Blowfish episode.
Oh, yeah.
You can tell by the telltale ketchup on his tape plate, which is from pouring all that ketchup with a fart sound effect on his meatloaf.
Yeah, once again, watch
the food
these scenes.
Transforms every moment.
Exactly. I said watch these scenes. Don't watch these scenes. But if you watch these scenes, sometimes they're eating, sometimes they're not eating. Mm-hmm. Sometimes what they're eating changes. Sometimes they're holding food, sometimes they're not. It's so bizarre and just really messes with your mind.
Yes. And then we get to Lisa misremembering the Valentine's Day episode to make it depressing, to then completely cut out the third act.
Yeah.
Does anyone else have a love story?
Yes, I do. And just like your love stories, it's tragic and filled with hurt feelings and scars that will never heal. It started appropriately enough with an innocent boy being embarrassed on Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
The Choo Choo Choose Me episode is one of the best ever, but it only works if you know the ending or if you see the ending, that it just ends with the classic scene of his heartbreaking in slow motion.
Yeah, we don't see the let's be friends scene where they come to terms with each other.
Yeah. Well, because the point of this episode is that they all have to be heartbroken until they hear the last story.
Yeah, and all we get of Bart's story is one scene with Laura. We don't even get any context. Like, oh, this woman broke Bart's heart.
Yeah, and that it was... Yeah, that it broke Bart's heart, and that there's nothing else about Laura. There's none of the Jimbo stuff. Like, you could have... If they wanted to break more hearts, they could talk about how, like, it was with Jimbo, and Jimbo's awful, but... They only had time for just that one cutscene of the heart being ripped out and thrown.
It's a cool scene, but I mean,
it's well animated.
Eating this.
if you're wanting scenes of heartbreak, then fine. And then what has to be the laziest act break to reopen too, of just like it ends on them all just sad. And reopens in the exact same setup, the exact same scene. It's just, again, like, so lazy. On any other episode, they would have at least changed the animation setup to make it interesting.
It's a really bad act break.
And then Marge has kind of a joke.
Well, as Jerry Lee Lewis would say, there's a whole lot of frowning going on.
Mom, doesn't any love story have a happy ending?
Of course! Remember when your Aunt Selma got married?
She really misremembers that one. But how does she... I guess maybe Selma told her later about that scene of the rubbing the feet.
Oh, yeah. Like, Marge couldn't have been there, of course. Maybe that... I mean, was that on their wedding tape?
No. Okay. That one... That was post-coital.
Right.
I think I lost a filling. no, one of my fillings popped out. That's how she said it. Yeah, and... Then they just cut to a couple of the quick ones just to shove in a couple extra things. That was from Black Widower. Then they flash back to 3 episodes ago.
Hey, but that was a whole like 4 months ago, right?
I know the summer was in between it, but still.
Yeah,
but
I forgot what happened.
I was taping them every episode and rewatching them. It was...
That doesn't seem like a happy ending. That seems more like a detached tale of modern alienation.
Huh.
I give up. Did anybody learn anything about love tonight?
They learned it screws everybody up.
Well, there's that side of it. But there's also... help me out here, Lisa.
Sorry, Mom. I've decided to save my love for someone who is guaranteed not to reject me. Soon, Corey, soon.
Now, that's definitely a John Vitti touch, the non-threatening boys magazine. And maybe the last Corey reference we get.
So first off, they cut out the Sound of Grandpa song there again to save money. They don't have to license that song again or pay the ASCAP.
That's different guitar noodling.
Yes. I like that Lisa sort of reviews The Graduate there, of just saying that's what the plot of The Graduate is. And actually, Bob, this, according to the Wikipedia I checked out, this is the final appearance on the show of Corey.
Oh.
He has never returned.
Yeah, the days of the Coreys were long gone.
It was definitely over at that point. His movies were straight to Sega CD at that point.
And so the last reference to Corey, and even though it's not a cutaway, Non-Threatening Boys is a reused joke. That wasn't a new name to a magazine. It was magazines that had been read before.
That's right.
So kind of a cheat there, too. We haven't had many clips on this one, but I did forget to say Marge's Whole Lot of Frowning Going On is a reference to Whole Lot of Shaking Going On, which was the other big hit of Jerry Lee Lewis other than Great Balls of Fire.
Soon to be a WWE pay-per-view.
It was a WWE pay-per-view and a very, very lame theme.
Oh,
but
boy.
Whole Lot of Shaking Going On, I found out, was actually a cover that he had covered an original song by an African-American musician, Big Maybell, who she had a modest hit in 1955 with it before it blew up with Jerry Lee Lewis. Let's hear the original.
21 drums on a whole bass horn. And somebody beating on a ding dong. Come on over, baby. Whole lot of shaking going on.
Very different from Jerry Lee Lewis.
It's important to note that Jerry Lee Lewis is from Shelbyville and he did marry his cousin. So write that down, kids.
I don't know. I at least like somebody hitting on the ding dong. I like that line there. But sorry, I got to go to something here. That was the end of Corey. I think Yardley Smith didn't like the Corey jokes.
She felt Lisa was too young for that kind of fixation, an 8-year-old.
I don't know 8-year-old girls. I've never raised an 8-year-old girl, so I don't know if it is weird for an 8-year-old girl to have a crush like that or not.
I recall my sister getting into that kind of stuff until she was at least 10 or 11.
I was there for the New Kids on the Block craze. And that shit was all over the ladies' folders. And yes, I called the 8-year-olds ladies.
And then the Jonas Brothers just a decade ago, too, which in my mind, the Jonas Brothers are recent, but they aren't. They aren't, man.
Yeah, I last knew Nick Carter as a child. Now he's a haggard 50-year-old man in a mugshot.
That shot of Nick Carter. Yeah. Or was that Aaron Carter?
It's Nick? Okay, yeah.
Oof, woof, boy. Things are bad there.
The Backstreet Boys are alive and touring with Boys to Men and New Kids on the Block, and my friends are seeing them all over the country together.
Oh, wow.
But then Homer saves the day by remembering one of their first ever flashbacks.
Well, kids, I tried, but maybe you're right.
Wait a minute, Marge. Love isn't hopeless. Look, maybe I'm no expert on the subject, but there was one time I got it right.
So the kids should be extra bored by this because they've been told this story before by Homer.
Right. There's not even a blackout.
Yes, and that I think it's kind of disturbing that where Homer begins the story, he's telling him, like, your mother was being molested by this guy unwantedly.
Yeah, he jumps right to the third act of that story.
Yes.
It really does, because you introduce, if you didn't know the story, it's a young Homer Simpson with hair whose first line is, all right, I'll walk in the mud.
I love that line delivery. It's still my favorite. All right, I'll walk in the mud.
Yeah, but I just like a new viewer might not even recognize Homer in the flashback.
Or even like, who is Artie Ziff? Who is this guy? Why is he voiced by the critic? This
and
is strange.
The town.
And then we get a kiss montage between them.
Yeah, which is a pretty lame-ass montage. But yes, just to show you how crap this episode is and how little the writers thought of it, the children are bored by the end of this and watch something else.
Yes.
See, kids? That's what I meant by romance.
Aww.
Mm-hmm.
I like the sound design of them laughing in the other room. Yeah, that is above and beyond kind of work for the show. If they just sounded like they were in the same room, would have been the same level of effort. I would have forgiven that level of low effort.
Yeah, and I have to say, we're pretty mean on this episode, but we don't blame any of these people. Like, I've had to do creative work against my will, and I put like a tenth of my ass into it.
I do 11,000 of these podcasts.
No, perhaps at the website I just quit, I put very low effort into some things, and I would really hate it if people did a whole podcast obsessing over this thing. I was like, you're not supposed to obsess over it. I was forced to do it by a shitty corporation, and it exists because I was made to. So,
by extension, we're forced to obsess over this episode, which we don't blame anybody for. It's bizarre because it sticks out like a sore thumb in a sea of beauty that is The Simpsons.
In their best years where they're doing their best work, that they just completely don't care and don't try, and even that they reuse so much old animation, like venomously so, and that's the best I can appreciate it, of just like, if this is extra bad so Merkin could tell Fox fuck you for making me do this, then I like that he did that.
It was made with an extra degree of spite, which I appreciate. And part of
part
of the Twitter fun I had was people saying, that's not the worst one. What about the panda rape one? What about the alligator one? I was like, no, at least they had new jokes and they tried something. Yes. They were not allowed to do anything but be as cheap as possible in this episode, and it's so unmemorable, no one remembers it. And hopefully we didn't traumatize you by making you remember it exists.
Homer smelling of panda love is at least an attempt to be funny with a new joke and new animation.
Yeah.
I don't like it at all.
I don't like it.
But
I'd be fascinated to know, I mean, is this still in syndication with 600 episodes to choose from?
I want to say they probably take these clip shows out.
Oh,
but
absolutely.
Maybe not the first one, because it is a new story in a way.
And I would think 138 should stay in there
For sure. But...
And All Singing, All Dancing even is a good, it is a good mockery of being made to do a clip show, and they make new songs.
There are new songs in it, yeah.
Yeah, I think that they joked in the previous clip show commentary that, can you imagine a time where there weren't enough Simpsons episodes, so they wanted us to make clip shows just to increase the episode count?
Yeah.
That's kind of what it's about, too. And it is a gross, cynical effort to increase an episode count, to have more episodes in syndication, and this has to be gone. And it is, even for Simpsons obsessives, this is erased from your mind. After this episode goes out, this will go back under the waves again, and I will never remember this episode because it is made to be unmemorable and empty.
Even the one sort of good joke is not very good. Well, thank you for listening, everybody. This has been Talking Simpsons. I've been your host, Bob Mackey. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. My other podcast is Retronauts. Every Monday, there is a new Retronauts episode all for you. Every classic gaming topic you can think of. If we haven't gotten to it yet, we will get to it. So just go to Retronauts.com or search for Retronauts in your podcast machine. You will find it. Download an episode about a topic you'll like, and I swear you'll probably like it. Mm-hmm. And if you think we shortchanged you this week by giving you a clip show, a not-so-great episode of The Simpsons, we can tell you, if you go to patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons, we have so much bonus content that will make up for this week. Right,
oh,
Henry?
My goodness, yes. You can listen to our Season 5 wrap-up. You can listen to and watch the deleted scenes from Season 5. Mm-hmm. You can listen to the first new episodes of Talking Critic.
That's right.
We've done community-driven episodes, too. There's a ton of extra stuff on there. So this week's episode, which is about half as long as our normal ones, there is a ton more there, so you will never run out of Talking Simpsons content if you go to patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons. $5 a month gives you access to so much cool stuff, and it lets Bob and I do this full time. It pays our rent, it buys our food.
That's right.
And we appreciate everybody that helps us, even if you can only afford $1 a month. That all adds up, and we appreciate everybody who is a patron. And of course, you can follow me on Twitter, HENEREYG.
Yeah, thanks so much for your support. And Chris.
Yeah, also on your Patreon is a full in commentary for the Simpsons movie.
That was so much fun.
Which we did in honor of its 10th anniversary, which is part of our show 30-20-10, where we look back 30, 20, and 10 years ago to that week in history, mostly pop culture, not a lot of news. And it was just, it's bizarre to me that the Simpsons movie is 10 years old. This thing I felt like I waited my whole life to see is a decade behind me.
Yes, and I know some people, I think I saw a couple comments that were like, oh, you should do an actual Talking Simpsons movie episode. I was like, I do want to do that, But that episode will be 4 hour long.
I think
four
it
hours
to be
long.
Like two parts. Yeah. We'd kill ourselves doing it all in one recording session.
Yes. So
wait a decade.
A decade and we'll be ready for it then. A decade from
that's,
now.
That's also on the Laser Time Patreon, patreon.com/LaserTime, which helps support Laser Time, which is a topic which started out as a topic based show. We've done stuff about The Simpsons. It leaks into practically everything we do, which necessitated this whole show. Mm-hmm. There's 30, 2010 in the weekly video game show about new video games and old. Video Game Apocalypse.
Yes, if you like us remembering stuff on here, you should listen to 302010, where we remember stuff that we remember the shit out of stuff on that.
Yeah, it's like the news portion that I usually do. It's really fun to see what that week in history looks like, and it usually will open up a window to your past because that's sort of how no one. No, not many people remember things by dates. You remember things by events.
In a recent episode, I got to talk about RoboCop and End of Evangelion in the same breath.
Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a great episode, Itchy and Scratchy Land. See you then.
Infotainment.